All of us are on a journey of becoming, a never-ending journey in pursuit of truth and deeper union with the divine. As you know, faith is a complicated thing, and this journey of becoming can be both difficult and painful. Far too often, we have not been given a space where we can safely address the complications and issues that arise naturally. My name is Joshua Patterson, and I am also on this journey of becoming. I am dedicated to inviting you into my story and creating a space where questions and critical thinking are welcome. I want to take an honest look at the issues and questions so common to this shared journey. I want to genuinely seek out what it means to follow Jesus in our ever-changing world, in our unfolding and expanding universe, and in our pluralistic society. I have come to know that doubt is not the enemy of faith, but rather that both doubt and curiosity are two of faith's biggest allies. I have learned that the Christian faith is more about wisdom and love than it is about correct doctrine or belief. And I believe that we are being invited to continually seek out both wisdom and love, renewing our minds, expanding our hearts, and rethinking our faith in the process. Thank you for joining me on that journey. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Rethinking Faith podcast. As always, I'm your host, Josh Patterson, and I have to apologize to you guys. It's been a little bit since I've put out an episode. Specifically, I think it's been about like 3 weeks now, which is not ideal. But things have been crazy. I think, you know, I had mentioned before on some previous episodes about how Full Tilt, the brewery I was at, kind of got, you know, shut down. I got laid off unexpectedly, and that kind of threw things into the ringer. And luckily, I had some interviews already lined up, and you know, recorded some episodes. But trying to find a job, trying to figure out how I'm going to pay my mortgage, etc., etc., kind of had me lining up interviews and reading as much as I did on the back burner. And so I have a job again, thank God. Or whoever you want to thank. I am now brewing at Union Craft Brewing here in Baltimore. So any Maryland locals, if you want to come hang out at Union, hit me up and we'll have some fun. But yeah, so I'm back to recording. I have a massive stack of books to my right. I have an awesome book here in front of me that I really enjoyed, which is actually convenient because the person who wrote it is hanging out with me today. And that individual is Lindsay Medford. Lindsay, how are you doing?
I'm pretty good. Yeah. Having a good day. I'm almost right about 6 months pregnant, and it's a good pregnancy day.
Oh, right on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, a good pregnancy day. I can't pretend to understand what that that means, but I will take it. My wife and I, children is a topic that is very current and live and active. However, we don't have any kids yet, so mm-hmm. Wink, wink, fingers crossed. In progress, but so I'm sure I'll learn soon enough. But yeah, Lindsay, first off, thank you so much for coming on and hanging out. And also thank you for your flexibility. I, you know, last minute texted you or emailed you for our previous time that we had set up to record. And I was like, I did a really bad thing. I accidentally scheduled this interview on a date night with my wife. And you were very gracious and flexible and moved the time to today. So thank you.
Thanks for having me. This is cool.
Yeah. So for people who maybe aren't familiar with yourself or your work, can you just kind of fill us in a little bit? Who is Lindsay Medford and what kind of things do you find yourself doing?
Yeah, I am a writer and speaker. I my husband and my dog and I just moved from Charleston, South Carolina to Chattanooga, Tennessee. So we now live on Cherokee land, and this is near where I grew up. So it feels really good to be coming home. Yeah, it's had me really reflecting on place and land and how that informs who we are. So I grew up around here super evangelical and went to Christian college, did a theology degree at just the right time for that school, it turns out, and got a pretty good education and learned to ask good questions. Did some like social service, social justice stuff in and around the time I went to grad school and did a master in theological studies. Married my husband pretty soon after that when we moved from Boston to South Carolina, and I was like, now it's time to change the world. And I was 26, and like 2 or 3 months later, I got super sick. So I have been very much not changing the world for the last 7 years, but writing, reading, learning, speaking, and still trying to find my way in social justice spaces and always learning more. So I have spent time with different activists and churches along the way of all this being sick and being a writer. So now I'm 32 and about to have kids. Just put out a book, just moved. So it's been a big year. And that's me, yeah.
Awesome. So the title of your book that you wrote is called My Body and Other Crumbling Empires: Lessons for Healing in a World That Is Sick. And I think prior to this, you had done some other writing as well. Is that correct?
Sure. Well, I've been writing on the internet for like 10 years. Blogging and writing for different places and people. And if you look on Amazon, I have several books, but they're mostly like some youth Bible curriculum and a devotional type thing that I self-published. It's not in print right now.
Okay, cool. Well, nice. But yeah, so the I so well here, I'll start with this. I really enjoyed your book. I a little bit of background on myself. Part of my story has been that I am kind of a person who tends to live in my head, and I have a hard time turning my brain off. I'm ADHD as fuck, if you haven't picked up on that about me yet. And so when I used to be a pastor and now I'm a brewer, and I had like really negative experiences working in the church that, you know, I've talked about a million times on previous episodes. But one of the things that led me to is working with the spiritual director. And my spiritual director, her name is Sid, she was amazing. One thing that she kind of helped show me and teach me was there are different ways than just using your brain to know things. And then, like, you know, my buddy Greg, who used to be the co-host on this podcast with me, came along, and the kind of way he talks about it is like the three centers of knowing. So he talks about head, heart, and body. And so things like embodiment became really important to me because I was like, whoa, this is a whole nother world, but also it lines up with my experience. Now I have language for it. And so I really, really, really enjoyed reading your book. I mean, I think the introduction was worth the price of admission alone. I found myself you know, tapping into maybe some Pentecostal roots, you know, cheering amen while I was
Yeah.
reading. So
Well,
thank you.
I went to college around here at Lee University and had a Pentecostal little stream into my theology for sure.
Yeah, the my previous co-host Marty, it falls very much within that category. So cheers to you, Marty. But before we kind of jump in, on Rethinking Faith, one thing that is super important to myself, to my listeners, is this idea of story. And we kind of like to figure out the why behind the things that people do, because we just think story is so powerful. And so I want to ask you why. Like, why My Body and Other Crumbling Empires? Like, why did you write this book at the time that you did? What's kind of the story behind it?
That's a really good question. Because I think I could have written it at any time in a space of a few years, and then didn't. And it would have been a really different book depending on when I wrote it, right? And when I did write it was like super mid pandemic. Well, we signed a contract in 2021, and but that was super live for me, especially having an autoimmune disorder and being very afraid of COVID myself, while the rest of the world is like, "Oh, that was we did that, done. Good job, everyone." the story is I got sick, and I just was ready for medical science and technology to make it all better, right? And I did have this disorder as a child, and so I knew what it was, which is a blessing. But also it had been in remission, and I just I'd forgotten about it. So re-encountering it as an adult turned out to be really a really different experience. And so after, the longer I waited for the doctor to find, the right chemical to fix my stupid broken body, the sicker I got. And the more depressed I got, because I don't actually believe anybody's body is like not stupid and broken, right? So I had to develop my own relationship to this whole situation after a little while, and started learning more about the immune system and autoimmunity, and learned that there's a lot going on here, and there's a lot of inputs to what could have been making me sick besides just the unlucky gene lottery. So then in this really long process of discovering what those things were that were making me sick, I learned how to work with and live with this body in a different way. And as time went on, all the things that were making me sick were very clearly also things that are making all of us sick and making our systems sick. So I actually started writing this book to say that, right? Like, here are the things making us sick. And it's super unjust to me, but also it's not good for you either. So that was where I started. And then, but as I was writing, I had also been in this place, and I kept moving farther into this place of realizing my body isn't just in this story, right? Isn't just trying to say these are diagnosed more problems. But I've also learned so much from my body about how we go about making these changes. And so how do we live with a really complex system that we're never going to fully comprehend or control, but we're people and we have aims and goals and visions of flourishing for our lives. And so how are we working within and alongside of all these really complex systems to try and go where we want to go, and also be humble enough to listen and pay attention and to work within that and to work together. And how is that different from this, like, what colonialism and empire have taught us about how we fix things rather than how we heal them?
Yeah, that's really good. I resonate so much with something that you said, and also you talk about in the book, was this idea, you know, you share your experience in, you know, dealing with the autoimmune like issues that you're having or continue to have, but like how kind of like the medical, or like how things were treated, were like more on this like mechanistic, like trying to like heal these like small, like different symptoms kind of thing. But rather like, and like, you know, sometimes it worked, sometimes it wouldn't. And then you somehow got to this point, you arrived at this point where you were like, okay, maybe it's a good idea to start listening to my body. You had this kind of change in perspective from like, my body is evil and out to get me, versus, oh, well, maybe my body is actually trying to teach me something. Maybe my body is actually intelligent. You know, how does, you know, if I listen to what my body's trying to tell me, how does that, you know, change my perspective or inform, you know, the kind of decisions that I'm making? And so like for you, what did that kind of like process look like, moving from my body as an enemy to like maybe my body is trying to help me? And like, what kind of things do you feel you learned about yourself when you started listening to the wisdom of your body?
Yeah, well, I wrote in like book about when I was in college and learned a lot of theology about incarnation. And so in one way, there was, I had always, since I was 19 or 20, really strongly believed that our bodies can't be evil. And, that in some ways they can't be out to get us. I mean, a lot of us experience our bodies as places of pain, and that doesn't have to always make sense or have a purpose. But at the same time, like, they still belong to who we are. And we could say the same about our minds, or potentially like our pasts or relationships. And that doesn't make them, you know, just whole pits of evil. And so really what happened is, as far as just changing my attitude, was that my doctor wanted me to go on this drug that just felt really drastic to me. And frankly, just because it was an injection, it made me really scared. I'm most scared of needles, and I had all these terrible side effect situations with other drugs. And so just like, yeah, that I was just really scared of it. And I was like, I will absolutely come back and do this thing with you, my doctor, and science. But I need a break from this, from the drugs. And so I was probably taking something, but I just was like, I need like a month or two to get ready for this new drug, or whatever comes next. And I just started researching. And I guess the drug was also a turning point of like, I have a chronic illness, and it is chronic, and it's making me ill, and my life is not going back to normal anytime soon. And so it was just trying to get curious. I read a whole bunch of books and skimmed a whole bunch of websites that just made these outlandish claims about autoimmunity in the process of trying to just sort of understand what an immune system even is, or and what medicine is trying to do about it. And I mean, particularly because the rates of autoimmunity in the developed world keep going up and up and up and up, and no one knows why. And so even as a theologian, having been trained to ask about context all the time, ask why all the time, this just the statistics of like, I'm not the only person having this experience, really made me want to know what else is contributing to this situation. And so I waded through some medical journals and some nonsense books and found people who were saying, you know, maybe there's foods that some people's bodies react to with inflammation, and everyone needs sleep, and maybe don't get enough sleep. You're really gonna have a hard time here. Fairly simple things that my doctor had never mentioned. Like, there was not a sense that I could, should, or would have any agency in supporting my body and trying to heal. Frankly, this one book called The Autoimmune Wellness Handbook really changed my life and started me down this path of like, can I tweak something, see how it goes? Can I pay close enough attention to what's going on here? If I'm going to be in this science experiment with all these like artificial chemicals that my doctor keeps prescribing to me, might I just as well be in a, you know, scientific experiment with myself and just food, sleeping, being with family and friends is really important. And so I guess we can be a little down on science, but at the same time, I was like becoming much more of a scientist, like paying really close attention to observing these variables and all of this. So I learned that I can trust my body, and I learned that it became very clear to me that, you know, we think that band-aids heal people or surgeries heal people or drugs heal people, but those things support the body's processes of healing itself. And it happens every day, and we forget how miraculous it is. And so I learned how many, and then as time goes on, I see so many more things that have this capacity for healing built into them. And we often really overlook and discount that. What the resource and the miracle that's already available to all these living systems that are so resilient if they're properly supported.
Yeah, and I love that you bring incarnation into that kind of conversation. You know, like if we want to talk theologically about things, because for me, like recently I was, you know, doing a podcast with some friends and kind of talking about like religious pluralism. And one of the questions that was asked had to do like, I don't know, like what, something along the lines of like, what is like the one kind of like doctrine that you like still hold very precious? And for me, it was incarnation. And I mean something, you know, I can nuance what I mean by incarnation, but one thing that I think it means is God deciding not to be God without us, and with the rest, you know, without the rest of creation. And incarnation, I think part of why it matters to me so much is because the way that I was taught growing up, like bodies didn't really matter. Like what really mattered was this like ethereal soul that I have, and maybe one day that's going to go somewhere else, and you know, my body doesn't matter. But in incarnation, you know, very orthodox way of talking, like within Christianity, like God became a human. And so bodies probably have to matter for something. And so I don't know. I kind of I love that you bring incarnation into this kind of conversation, because I think it helps provide like a nice, like rich and deep kind of theological underpinning to the whole kind of the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it just keeps growing for me. And the more I just observe all this and live all of this, the more I really start to feel like I think God wanted to do this with us because it's like worth doing. And there's something really interesting and beautiful about it. And I just, the way that the creation is alive and all of this is unfolding in this whole web of relationships is like part of what Jesus was doing and trying to tell us and show us. That's what I think.
I love it. And I think so this idea that you're hitting at is part of why I loved your introduction so much. Is because, so for me as a process thinker, I hold very strongly to this idea that none of us exist within a vacuum, but rather everything exists within relationship. Like I cannot be fully known unless people also know the relationship that I have with my wife or with some of my best friends or the job that I have or the kind of communities that I hang out in, my past, my childhood, nobody exists within a vacuum. And so this idea that everything is interrelated and interconnected, I think can sound maybe like hippy dippy or something like that. I think it's true. And I think it's almost speaking that way is kind of like a form of resistance, at least in our particular context in America, where everything is so hyper individualistic. Everything is so individualized and the way we look at things are so like mechanistic. And I think the way that you talk about and focus on relationship and interbeing is really helpful and important. So I love I love that you elaborate on that kind of throughout the book.
Yeah, I've been reading since I left school. I've been reading, which was a while now, I'm reading feminist theology and Black theology, and really influenced by certain indigenous worldviews and authors, and even while learning a lot and reflecting a lot on my relationships with poor folks. And I realized this like a year or two ago. I was like, I am a process thinker now. I still haven't really like gone back to the narrow field of open and relational and process theology, but I used to be really scared of this, and now I just realized that everything I said was just that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's, I love it too, because then you take, which I think is brilliant, like the kind of, you use your own story and your own experience of learning about your body and the immune system and how it's this like deeply complex interrelated system. And then you kind of use that as a metaphor to talk about like all these other like different empires and like other systems in the world. And I think it's so helpful because a lot of the times when we think about major issues of like social justice or like ecological justice, these kind of things, we kind of think about the same way as like our immune system, right? It's like, for example, climate change. Propaganda has a show called Hood Politics, and he recently put out an episode called like Fuck Around and Find Out. And basically it was about the climate crisis. And what he was saying is like, people have been telling us, and like that sign was 1,000 miles ago, and now we're finding out now. And so, but what he was saying is like, that feels so overwhelming to people because it's like, what, okay, so what do I do? And so it's similar, that metaphor you drag over then from like, same with the immune system. It's like, wow, this is like such an complex system. It's very deep. It's not just about individuals. I mean, the individuals matter, but it's also complex. And so that metaphor that you kind of carry throughout the book, I don't know. I really liked it. I thought it was witty and fun and illuminating, and yeah. So I like it.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, we the mechanistic worldview you were talking about before makes us think that we have to comprehend something in order to control it, in order to make it better, and that's not how really much of anything actually works. It can be like a really useful paradigm for something very specific on a probably pretty short timeline. But otherwise, we never comprehend it all, and we can never control it all. And it takes a lot more humility, it takes a lot more patience to work with something, make shifts, do experiments, get creative, work in the spaces and relationships in between things to make changes, but that feel very small often from day to day, but become really deep and profound. And much more sustainable at the same time because they started so small.
Yeah, it kind of, the metaphor makes me think too. And I, if you didn't explicitly say this within your book, I think you at least kind of like hint at it, is that like there is kind of, when we have these kind of conversations, about, you know, like crumbling empires, like the healthcare system, the economy, racism, you know, etc. There's gun control. There's kind of this tendency to fall on kind of one of two sides. You either fall in the part, you know, in the kind of thinking where it's like, oh, it's all a heart issue. It's all about individuals. And if only, you know, we could teach people the right things and, you know, they could become Christians or, you know, whatever party you think they should be a part of, then things would be better. Or we can fall on like another side of things where it's like, well, it's all systemic. Only the system is the problem. And if we could just fix the system, then everything would kind of go away. But I think, unless I'm misreading you, I think one thing that you're seeing throughout the book is like, it's kind of both of those things. Like, it's the systems matter, but so do the individuals. Because if we just fix individuals and they're good, the systems that we have still suck. But if we just fix the system and not individuals, then people still suck. And so I think it's interesting how you kind of, and again, unless I'm like misreading you, I think you're kind of highlighting both of those things and offering them in solution to some of the crumbling empires you reference throughout the text. Do you think that's like a fair reading of what you're trying to do?
Yeah. And I managed to keep my Adrienne Marie Brown quotes to a minimum. But her book Emergent Strategy and the sort of emergent social justice thinkers that have coalesced around that are kind of like a hidden heartbeat of the book. And so a lot of what they have to say is like, we're not going to build systems and structures that are just if we aren't practicing them on a really small scale. Like, it does not make sense to imagine that we are going to construct a just machine and implement it and either like change all the people in it somehow just by being part of it, or that the people in it will become irrelevant. And we don't want that, right? Like, I mean, maybe some people don't like democracy, but I like democracy. And that requires us to stay in relationship with each other and to make change in this system is really, really hard. And it's also hopeful, I think, and it could be really joyful.
Yeah, I love it. It kind of reminds me, there's a book that I like called Mystery Without Magic. And it's just like, it's a guy named Russell Prejean, and he's like trying to offer like a theological perspective that's like more naturalistic and not just like, you know, how can we embrace mystery without just like saying, oh, it's like this just magic. And he has this bit in the book where he's talking, he's a process thinker again. He's thinking about self-care or like inner spiritual growth and development, these kind of things, and how that often gets written off by people. And he's saying, well, like, actually, as a process thinker, someone who recognizes that we don't exist just in a vacuum, that I'm not just an individual, but rather I exist within this community, actually doing the difficult kind of inner work and confronting, you know, my own prejudice or my childhood traumas or whatever, is actually, because I exist within this web of relationships, doing that inner work is actually also part of healing the community. Yeah. And it starts there. It doesn't end there. But that these ideas are deeply, connected. And so I don't know. I love that. That's kind of, like a through line throughout, your book as well. So, yeah.
Yeah. And this whole fake, totally false dichotomy felt really like a difficult, intense for me for a long time. And then I like just kept being in these actual spaces where people are actually trying to make these changes, with activists and social justice, nonprofit church leaders. And I just kept seeing people trying to take shortcuts without doing their own work. And it just doesn't, it's really ineffective. Like, regardless of whether they feel good or I want to judge them, it's like very clear if you spend enough time in some of these spaces that like people are really in their own way. And so yeah, when we talk about self-care, it gets so like everyone's sick of that word, but there's a reason we still need it. And there's a reason I'm really excited about Dr. Shaniqua Walker Barnes's book about self-care that's coming out later this year.
I will have to add that to my list of books to read.
I think it'll be in the fall.
I'll have to take that. Okay, cool. Awesome. Awesome. All right. I'm trying to think where I want to go because, like I said, ADHD brain's in a million places. All right. I want to try to continue the body metaphor, and then try to take that metaphor and focus it on one of the things you talk about in the book, which is the earth. And how did you phrase it? Like the earth and other like trash heaps or something like that. Earth and other priceless trash heaps. And so I want to try to talk about that a little bit. So when I like in my perspective, theologically, one thing that I find helpful is kind of, so like I'm a panentheist. So I think like everything exists within God, but like the universe doesn't exhaust what God is. And so a metaphor that's been handed to me recently is kind of like thinking about, it's actually a body metaphor, and it's thinking about how like you and I, but also like other animals, creation, etc., are kind of like cells within the body of God, or like the body of Christ, whatever language you want to use. And, you know, each one of those individual cells, it plays an important role. Has certain feelings, like our cells impact our body, impact ourselves, and we also too have relationship with ourselves to an extent. And so when I think about that imagery, I like it because I think it's beautiful. And it's like, I hope that it's true. And also I have, you know, like boring philosophical and metaphysical reasons why I think it's true. But also I think when we start thinking about that and taking it seriously, then it helps me to not write off really anybody, because it recognizes that like you and I are kind of in this together, right? And it's kind of like the idea that, you know, what I do to myself, I do to you, I do to my neighbor, this kind of thing, I do to God. So it helps me in that regard. But also when it comes to creation and talking about like the climate crisis, it's like, oh, well, like this matters because this is the body of God kind of thing. And so I know maybe that can sound weird to some people. But I just think that body metaphor and the, you know, even if we zoom out and don't talk about it as weird as I did, or just recognize that like we're not living on Earth, but we like come from Earth, like we're a part of it.
Yeah.
And like we're a part of ecosystems and things like this, I think can really help shape how we talk about climate crisis and things like that. So I would just be interested in your opinion. How do you think about those kind of things in ways that you have found helpful?
I'm thinking, this is just what came up. I'm thinking of something a friend in a writing workshop said, Clint. I don't know his last name anymore. We were talking about this one time a few years ago, and he said, we talk about throwing things away, but there is no away. It goes somewhere. And we just don't see it. And just because we don't see it doesn't mean it doesn't exist and doesn't continue to affect us and doesn't continue to be our responsibility. And I think maybe I'm just extending your metaphor even further, but there's so many things we could talk about on a daily basis that we think of as a way or think of as not mine. Or not my deal, not my sphere. And they're actually deeply intertwined with our choices or our histories or any number of things. And the point here is not just like you should feel bad for throwing things away, but the point is also that things are designed to hide this from us, right? Like if no one wants the landfill in their backyard, but if it was in your backyard, maybe you would put less stuff in it, right? And there's so many things that, you know, in economics or whatever, we just call it an externality and forget about it. And there's no external. There's one closed biosphere, and this is it. and I mean, that became really evident with a lot of things about my life and I was treating my body that way before I got sick too, was like, well, that like I perceived my body to be an infinite resource and like a thing for me to exploit at will. But it's not even like Is my body fighting back, or is my body just like, you know, depleted? Is it just, have I put enough like crap in it? Not like just because I did not think about it. Have I taken like so much from it? Not really for any reason. Like that was a good reason, just because I didn't have to think about it. Which maybe is like a universal sin of the young that I'm being a little too hard on myself about, but it just became very clear once I was sick that my body does not operate that way, and that if I want to work with it, I have to be kinder to her and have to listen and have to even just, again, going back, like, not just identify problems or find things to blame, but really be curious in terms of like, what if this symptom was a clue? What if this was trying to tell me something? What if the thing that it feels like my body needs is the thing that my body needs? And we can do that with the earth. We can learn to do that with the earth. Collectively, it takes more work in organization, right? Like it takes more scientists. It takes more attention from all of us and to get our representatives and leaders to pay attention, that same careful, close attention. But there are so many ways we can be working with this system if we're willing to, again, really interrogate what we mean when we say some of these things about externalities and growth and waste and what's quote unquote feasible. Like, well, is it feasible? What's not feasible? What is feasible in the next 10 years is not feasible in the next 200. And we can all just repeat that over and over, or we can start to practice. Maybe we have to practice on a really small scale first, what it actually even looks like to shift how we perceive time and efficiency and effectiveness and sustainability itself.
Yeah, I think I don't know. I don't know a better way than to start small and go from there, especially like when things like money are involved and that there are people who are making a lot of money to protect certain ideas and certain ways of doing things. But I think also too, like us as members of society, as consumers, whatever, like money talks. I mean by that is like we can not support certain things, that's a whole nother rant. One thing also too, as you were just talking, that I was reminded of when you're talking about like our bodies, is I've read a lot of Thich Nhat Hanh's work. If you've heard of him, he was like a Zen Buddhist teacher. And one thing that I hadn't thought about in a while, but that he kind of did just as like a daily practice that's very pragmatic, is when he would wake up in the morning, he would kind of give thanks for the different parts of his body. And it sounds weird, but he would kind of like out loud be like, oh, good morning, eyes. You know, I see you. Thank you. Or like, you know, my back hurts, but like, oh, well, like, good morning, back. You know, I see you. Thank you. And kind of learning to hold his view and his perspective of his body, but he also talked about like his emotions this way, kind of in the same way that like a mother might hold like a screaming infant, with like care and compassion, and just being grateful for the gift that our bodies are. I hadn't thought about that in a while, and as you were speaking, that also too kind of came to mind, like the pragmatic side of things. So
yeah, I definitely had to do that myself, especially pregnant, like, good morning, feet. We didn't recover last night. I think there's that mother image. When I start talking about, well, I just have to be really faithful to this routine of getting enough sleep and getting enough time with my friends and family and being outside and taking my meds and like these are the things that keep me, you know, when we talk about sustainability, this is my like do it or lose it sort of life. And I think people immediately turn to like organizational strategies and life hacks and this like discipline and willpower to do all this. And I'm not saying that it was not hard, particularly at the beginning, to shift towards this, just do the thing. But there was also very much an element of like, no one besides me has a job of taking care of me. And like, am I gonna resent that just because I'm not used to it? Or am I gonna let these be practices of tenderness? And am I gonna resent my body for offering me feedback about whether, you know, what's working and what's not? Or am I gonna say, thank you for these signals, and let's do what we need to do to calm this? You know, like, I think actually, like, inflammation is such a clear signal. You know, if you think about a bug bite or a burn, it's like burning and red and inflamed, and you're like, this is a signal that like something is wrong. Or if you twist your ankle, you're not going to be mad at your ankle for trying to get you to stay off of it, right? Because that's what the inflammation is doing. And so even though my inflammation was on a much bigger, longer, more miserable scale, I had to learn to take that attitude towards it in order to, that was part of this whole, you know, the living system of my life that I was learning to shift. That was a big element of that system, was how I interacted with the different parts of my body from day to day.
Yeah, I guess for me, within like my own life, you know, like I haven't had to deal with any kind of like chronic illness or anything like that. But I had a stint of like really bad depression and anxiety, kind of, you know, coupled together. I still most definitely deal with anxiety, but the depression, anxiety, like the mental health issue, I haven't thought about it quite as explicitly this way. But if I kind of try to frame that in the same way that you're talking, like, what is this, you know, depression and et cetera, what is my body trying to tell me? Actually think, like, looking back at my, you know, past history in those like kind of darkest times, I think there actually was deep wisdom in what my body was trying to tell me. Like, I developed depression when I was in, like, you know, the first church I ever worked in. It was a deeply abusive situation. It was not good. And then moved to another church, and that church was not nearly as bad as the first one. Had its own kind of issues. It felt like I was working in like a teenager soap opera or something. Very dysfunctional staff dynamics, that kind of stuff. And then finally moved to a church that was really good. And there was a lot of healing, but then it continued because my internal world and my external world weren't aligning. Mm-hmm. And it took therapy and spiritual direction to kind of come to that realization. But then once I did, and I started acting upon the things, you know, that were part of why my body was responding in the way that it was, things started to slowly but surely get better. You know, and now I'm in a place now where I definitely miss some of, you know, my past experiences as like being a pastor and stuff. But I absolutely love making beer. I love the brewing industry and, you know, the customers and the people that I've got to meet. But even just listening to my body in that sense, moving out of the space that was not healthy and into a new one, worked wonders. And so that, like, yeah. I don't know, as you were talking, I was kind of like, oh, actually, you know what? Interesting. So, yeah, just.
No, I've had that experience a few times. I've had it enough times that I think I'm starting to get better at being depressed. like better at doing that, listening and shortening the acute episodes. I do think the only way for me had to do that has been to just be really excessively, impossibly, like, gentle and kind to myself in a way that feels like not like whatever we would call progress. It does not feel like things. It feels like I don't know, like everything could halt forever because there's no way to know the future. There's no way to know exactly, and there's often I think we do often have a sense, like a almost unconscious sense, that we're about to discover something we don't really want to know, and slowing down long enough to find that out feels very scary as well. But I super relate to that. I have told, for whatever reason, I just told a story in like one little page about how I actually experienced that in college. And that was kind of the first place I had this experience of being like, oh, like once I got better, I could see that I was sleeping so much because my body like was going to make me slow down. And I was crying all the time because I like would not let my emotions like be metabolized, and I would not let them be safe in relationship, but you know, it was time for them to go somewhere. And so there, that was my first experience of being like, this was a really horrible thing. And well, if I don't learn to listen to it and work with it, even if I don't like it, it's going to just keep getting worse and be like super bad news in the future. So yeah, I've been there too.
Yeah. No, I love the kind of like verbiage used there. Like I've gotten better at being depressed. Cause I kind of relate to that too. And like, yeah, you just like learn different tricks and learn to kind of like slow down and ask, you know, your body and yourself, like, okay, what are you trying to tell me? And then kind of go from there. But I guess like one more question that I'd like to ask you is just, and maybe it's an unfair question, so forgive me. But you talk about like a variety of like other crumbling empires, you know, as you extend your metaphor throughout the book, include like healthcare, the economy, the like importance of community, talk about the earth, like we mentioned. But like, what if you had to pick one? Like, is there a crumbling empire currently that you are super passionate about? And like, why is that? Which would, if you had to pick one, what might it be?
Man, I've been really trying to like find the words, and I think I'm really close to finding the words. But it's been like 10 or 15 years where I've been trying to be like, we are missing this really essential vocabulary and paradigms for like how everything is connected. And so I do really resist isolating things, but I would say in our new town and in this, what I've been reading and pondering lately, both homelessness and poverty have come up a lot. And I think I've known a lot of unhoused and poor people at different times in my life and been in pretty close relationship. And those relationships and the way of life and the ways we think about prosperity, the ways those relationships have changed my life has just consistently been at the core and at the foundation of a lot of other things, ways I've come to think and act and want to see the world change. And I just so much. When we talk about empire, we talk about capitalism, we talk about whiteness. We're really missing so much when we talk about these systems without being in dialogue with the people affected by them, and which always like kind of always comes down. Those most affected are those living in poverty. And so, and of course, the reasons we excuse and allow poverty in the richest country on earth are aspects of a whole culture that is super damaging to all the rest of us as well. And the system, the effects of the systems, you know, having like really traumatized and under-resourced people around you is not a nice way to live, right? I think most human societies in most of history have recognized that. And it's not even like, are you a good person or a bad person? It's like, we're not going to tolerate living like this. So yeah, you got me on a rant. So I guess that's the one that's foremost for me right now.
No, it's good. It reminds me too of like my friend Terrence Lester. Have you heard of like Terrence or like any of his work? He does like Love Beyond Walls, specifically works with people currently experiencing homelessness. He wrote a book called I See You. He has a new book coming out from IVP called All God's Children. But Terrence is awesome, and Love Beyond Walls is a really awesome organization. But I love that you I love that that's the crumbling empire, because I think what's cool about it is it demonstrates your point that all of it is interconnected and interrelated. Because when we talk about racism, like the communities that are affected the worst are the poor. When we talk about climate change, people who are affected the worst are the poor. When we look at like COVID-19, this massive pandemic, the poor were affected heavily, right? And so like then this gets into like intersectionality and like et cetera, et cetera, right? And so I think it really is, I don't know, it's the way that our current society is structured bothers me, because it produces so many the poor people kind of as like, it's like a product of the system. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like a part of the system. It's like almost like in order for this system to work, it's a necessary evil and blah, blah, blah. But the people on top don't give a shit because they're happy and good. And like, it doesn't matter. Right. Like, I don't know. Then I'm going to start ranting and swearing a lot and saying things that are not nice.
Well, I would just add, I really strongly believe that the poor are also, we're all like, oh, this is just too hard and I'm too overwhelmed and we just don't have enough resources. Like the poor are the ones that are exercising the creativity and the skills and the interdependence the rest of us have lost. And there's a lot of, you know, it is more complex than that, as far as like how we share leadership and how we start slowly shift these systems. But they're the ones that are doing the thing already.
No, 100%. I think that's such a good point, because it oftentimes, especially for people like myself who come from like a more privileged background perspective, like, you know, grew up in like an upper middle class white family in America. I currently am like a middle class white cisgender male. And oftentimes when we see problems like poverty or race, etc., there's this tendency to kind of have like a savior complex that doesn't actually allow room. It adds to the problem, because then it's now like putting yourself still higher rather than like these, like rather than taking people who are actually currently experiencing these things and being like, hey, what do you think? And you know what I mean? So like this, it's the relationality. It's the mutual relationships that we have. It's not looking as thing at mechanistic, but rather as this like deep interconnected relationship and community. So yeah.
When you talk about starting with our bodies, I think one thing I forgot to say is like, that is a really, at least in our culture, that can be a really intense exercise in humility. But humility is just such a key ingredient to this whole thing we're trying to reimagine.
Yeah, humility and curiosity are like, I think, two of my favorite spiritual practices or spiritual disciplines that I think we could all benefit from practicing both of those things. So I'm with you. Lindsay, I guess I could ask, like, is there anything that you're like, oh my goodness, I can't believe Josh didn't bring this up, or like any kind of like last words or something like that that you would like to share or offer to our listeners as we wrap up our time together today?
I guess I have been thinking a lot that people listening might have this question of like, you keep talking about slowness and shifting things and waiting and patience and smallness and like all the, you know, you're also talking about climate change. It's really urgent. What do you even mean? And I think the crumbling empires part is like, there is this piece of like, if we're looking at a longer scale, a deeper scale, a more fundamental scale, a more whole and holistic scale of change, there's a survival element too of like, some of these things are going to crumble and it's going to be really painful, like in the meantime of something new emerging. And that actually, that's also why I think the input of poor and marginalized folks is so vital too, because like, they know how to survive. And I think the rest of us are coming very quickly to the realization that if we are not practiced in sort of literal survival, sometimes we're behind the curve. And I think that sounds really scary. I'm trying to make it a lot less scary in the book. But I just wanted to acknowledge that sounds super drastic, and in some ways it is really drastic. But there's also just so much hope, and there's so many people throughout the history of humanity that have survived crumbling empires and made something beautiful of it in the meantime. And we very much have the ability to do that.
Yeah, I dig it. And I guess within Christian circles, some might call that life, death, resurrection, maybe a helpful metaphor. You know, within more like, indigenous kind of theology, you can talk about like the changing of the seasons. There's so many ways, like Richard Rohr calls it like the wisdom pattern. And so, yeah, I don't know. It's deeply helpful. And, I think, on top of that too, like Lindsay, again, I really enjoyed, your book. I enjoyed this conversation. I apologize. I feel like I've kind of been all over the place, tonight. So
it's a process book. It's a little everywhere. So I'm totally down.
Sweet. All right. Well, where might people go to find you, to connect with you, connect with your work?
Yeah, my website is lindseymedford.com. That's LYNDSEY. And you can find link to wherever you might like to buy the book, My Body and Other Crumbling Empires, at that website. And you can also, the place to keep up with me most reliably is via Substack, and that's of course there as well.
Awesome. Well, I'll be sure to link those things in the show notes. And yeah, listeners, do yourself a favor, pick up a copy of Lindsay's book. I really enjoyed it, and I think you guys will too. I love I don't know. I think there's something beautiful, and I say this all the time on this podcast, but there's something beautiful when somebody is willing to go deep within their own story and put it out there, because then other people might find themselves there as well. And I think the world gets better every time somebody is willing to go deep enough into their story and put it out there for the benefit of others. So thank you for doing that. Thank you for your work and the kind of conversations that you continue to have. So I enjoyed our conversation and time
together.
It's
been a gift to me too. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Lindsay, have a great rest of your evening. And listeners, as always, go in peace.